Welcome to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I'm your host, Isaac Wolf. The second round has finished. A pair of Game 7s happened yesterday, which we will talk about in a second. But first, two awards were announced in the time that we were gone. Nikola Jokic won MVP, and this doesn't really surprise me. It was him or Embiid to me, and both had a solid argument. Jokic, you could argue, you know, was first in every advanced analytical category, averaged, 26, 13, and 7, something like that. Very impressive stuff from him. His team finished sixth in the conference. I think something needs to be said about that, but at the same time, they didn't have Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr., so he carried even more of a load. And so Jokic fairly won it. My pick was Embiid, but I think Jokic was deserving of it as well. And Monty Williams won Coach of the Year. This, I thought, would go to Taylor Jenkins because he has a less talented roster and did more with, less. But, I mean, Monty had the best record in the league, so I guess that was his argument. But the Suns, you know, their season crashed and burned, which we will talk about in a second. Let's talk about that series. Mavericks Suns in game four. The Mavs even up the series behind great shooting, and Chris Paul was, you know, in foul trouble for most of the game. Game five was a blowout, a 30-point Suns win in response to the Mavericks winning game four. And then in game six, the Mavericks responded with a blowout of their own. They ended the first half on a 19-6 run over the last 6.5 minutes, carried that momentum into the second half and won 113-86. Luka put up 33 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, and 4 steals. And in terms of the 3-point shooting in this game, it was 16-6 in favor of Dallas in terms of 3-pointers made. That's a 30-point difference. It doesn't look like much in the box score, but that adds up to 30 points, and that was close to the final score. It was a 27-point win for Dallas. We're going to talk about the game sevens that happened yesterday separately from the rest of the series because it deserves its own time. The Sixers and the Heat, game four. Every time the Sixers looked like they were about to make a run, and they were ahead most of the game, Jimmy Butler had a response, especially in the third quarter. He had 17 third quarter points. The Sixers made a key 10-0 run early in the fourth with Embiid on the bench. Harden leveled up with 16 fourth quarter points. He hit 4 threes, looked like his old self. It was really encouraging. Finished with 31 points until game 5, which was utter disaster for Philadelphia. Everything went right for Miami, and the Sixers just showed zero effort. They were lazy the whole game on both ends. It looked like they didn't want to play. It looked like they didn't want to be there. Game 5, this is the most pivotal game of a series, especially when it's tied, 2-2. The Heat, a very disciplined and well-coached team, took advantage of the lack of Sixers' effort and won 120-85. There should never be a 35-point differential in a Game 5 when the series is tied 2-2. That was just unbelievably pathetic by the Philadelphia 76ers. In Game 6, Danny Green went down early with a nasty knee injury, and it turned out to be a torn ACL, which doesn't affect the Sixers because they're done. But Danny Green is likely out for next season, or at least the majority of it. So that was a tough loss for the Sixers right away. The Heat gave Joel Embiid the outside shot in the first half, and he took advantage, knocked down, I think, 2 or 3 of them. And that kept the Sixers afloat in the first 24 minutes. But Jimmy Butler scored 23 points in the second half and lifted the Heat to a 99-90 win to finish the series off. Butler with 32 points. Max Strus was kind of the unsung hero for Miami. 20 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. James Harden, 11 points. 0 in the second half. Just an atrocious performance. He was 0 for 2 in the second half. He took 2 shots in the second half of an elimination game at home after going 4 for 7 in the first half, 3 of 5 from 3. We will revisit this topic. Bucks Celtics, game 4. I mean, was this Veterans Day? Because Al Horford had the game of his life. 30 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. He shot 11 of 14 from the field. He dunked on Giannis. 16 fourth quarter points. He didn't miss a shot. He went 8 for 8 in the fourth quarter, Al Horford did. And that was, you know, the end of the game push. The Celtics needed to win 116-108 on the road and tie the series up. Horford and Tatum each put up 30. Giannis had 34, 18, and 5. In game 5, give Drew Holiday Defensive Player of the Year. All you need to know is he was the MVP of this game. The Celtics were up by 6 with 2 minutes left. Then Giannis hit a big 3 to cut the deficit in half. Giannis then gets the steal on Marcus Smart. Holiday ties up the game with a 3 of his own. Tatum goes 2 for 2 from the free throw line. Giannis gets fouled, makes 1 of 2 free throws. Portis gets an offensive rebound and put back to put the Bucks up 1. And you may be thinking, I haven't heard of Drew Holiday's name much yet. You're about to. Down 1, Celtics with the ball. Marcus Smart drives, and it is blocked by Drew Holiday on an amazing play. Smart beats the initial, bullies the initial defender and has to kind of double clutch. Holiday comes out of nowhere, blocks it with the left hand, I think. Falling out of bounds, throws it off of Smart to give Milwaukee the ball back. Connaughton hits 2 free throws, Boston down 3. Smart with the ball again, trying to tie the game. Tatum is wide open on the opposite side of the court, but he couldn't see him because by the time he looked up, the ball was out of his hands. Drew Holiday ripped it right out of Marcus Smart's hands, and the Bucks won 110-107. Two huge defensive plays late in the game. Simply, won the game for Milwaukee. Drew had 24, 8, and 8. Yes, Giannis had 40, but Drew was the MVP and beat the Defensive Player of the Year at his own game. Game 6 was just a duel of the superstars. Giannis was legendary. 44 points and 20 rebounds. First with a 40-20 playoff game since Shaq in the 2001 Finals, Game 1. And then Jason Tatum put up 46-9, and the Celtics won to tie the series and send it to Game 7 back in Boston. But before we go there, we're going to visit the Warriors series. Game 4. Grizzlies, Warriors, Memphis without Ja again. The Grizzlies led for the first 47 minutes and 15 seconds in this game. They led for the first 47 minutes and 15 seconds of this game until Steph Curry hit 2 free throws with 45 seconds left to put the Warriors up by 1. Then some back and forth until the Warriors, up 3 in the final seconds. Jaren Jackson Jr. goes for the tie and gets blocked by Draymond. We are seeing a lot of great defensive plays in these playoffs, and it's awesome. It took a 39-point fourth quarter for the Warriors to get the win, 101-98, but they did. Curry put up 32, Jaren led Memphis with 21. In Game 5, this was the most lopsided playoff game I've ever watched in my life. The Warriors trailed by as many as 55 points. Yes, you heard that correctly. They were losing by 55 points, 119-64 at one point late in the third quarter. 119-64. That's 55 points, 55 point deficit. That's unbelievable. Final score was 134-95. Memphis had 7 in double figures, 2 more with 9 points. So basically 9 if you want to round up. And Steven Adams had 7. Steph Curry's whoop that trick comment before the game backfired. This originates from a song that was played in a movie that was partially filmed in Memphis. The Grizzlies first played the song during their 2013 series against the Clippers, which they won, and it's, kind of stuck in the culture ever since. FedEx Forum blasted the song during the fourth quarter, and Steph and Draymond took it all in, and, they laughed along with it. Draymond was cheering and dancing with them, but it was pretty funny because that comment backfired big time. They trailing by 55. You can't do that. Game five again. What is up with game fives like not being important? The only good game five we saw was the Bucks and the Celtics. So this takes us to game 6, which game 6 Klay showed up as he should, as he always does, I should say. 11 points, 3 of 3 from 3 in the first quarter. But in the first half, every time the Warriors took a lead, the Grizzlies had a run in response. They had a run of 7-0, 14-0. Golden State, kind of uncharacteristically careless with the ball. 12 first half turnovers. But it was the Warriors ending the half on a 9-0 run, leading 53-51. The Warriors led by 1 after 3, and then after about 6 minutes of back and forth, Golden State went on an 18-3 run to seal the win, 110-96. After losing to Memphis in last year's play-in, the Warriors end the Grizzlies season in the second round. Game 6, Klay, 30 points, 8 of 14 from 3, showing up like he always does. Curry, 29 points. Draymond, 14 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists. And then Kevon Looney had just 4 points, I think, but he had 22 rebounds. Which leads me to my next point. The Warriors absolutely demolished the Grizzlies on the glass, 70-44. And in this series, you know, they started Xavier Tillman for the first two or three games. Steven Adams was not available. And it was an issue because Tillman's undersized at the center position. He's only 6'8". Maybe 6'9 is a generous listing for him. But he was undersized and, you know, it was problematic because the Grizzlies couldn't rebound. But it didn't matter once they threw in Steven Adams, who is much bigger and much stronger than Tillman. Because, I mean, 70-44, that's 26 more rebounds. The Warriors attempted 17 more threes than the Grizzlies did. They got so many second chance opportunities, and they made good on them. 20 of 53 from downtown for Golden State. That is always going to be hard to beat. All right, it is time for Game 7, Bucks-Celtics from Boston. First quarter, Boston struggled to get any looks in the paint. You know, the size of Giannis and Brook Lopez was huge defensively for them. They dominated those first 12 minutes. Those two did. Giannis had 10 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. Scored or assisted on the team's first 24 points. They scored 26 points in the first quarter. Giannis scored or assisted on 24 of them. Lopez, 7 points and 3 rebounds. They needed him to step up. He hadn't hit a 3 in this series until this game, and they, you know, needed more from the supporting cast. Giannis can't do everything without Middleton, even though he kind of can. Based on the numbers, he was averaging 40 and 15 over games 3, 4, 5, and 6. In the second quarter, Boston fell behind by as many as 10, then took their first lead of the game since it was 3-2, leading 32-30, but Milwaukee responded with 7 straight points. But it didn't matter, because then Boston hit back-to-back threes to retake the lead, and there was no shortage of defense, actually, the rest of the way. 48-43 at halftime, the score. Celtics on top. In the second half, the Celtics rattled off 3 threes in a row to start the half, and a huge call came with just less than 8 minutes to go in the third. Tatum picked up his 4th foul on a questionable offensive foul call. You know, he kind of elbowed Connaughton on his way to the hoop. It was very debatable. I mean, he elbowed him, but was it his shooting motion? Honestly, it didn't look like it to me. It kind of looked like he was just trying to clear him out. You could argue that it was, because players do that now. Just that motion of sticking their arms out and clearing space to get a shot off in the lane. But it didn't matter. The Celtics just kept hitting shots and getting stops. That's the best way I can summarize the second half. They've pulled away and won 109-81. Jason Tatum, 23 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists. Jaylen Brown, 19 points, 8 rebounds. Marcus Smart, 11 points, 7 rebounds, and 10 assists. But the hero was Grant Williams. Yes, Grant Williams. 27 points, 7 threes. He was 7 of 18 from 3. Grant Williams took 18 threes in this game. That is just weird. The only players with 25 points and 7 threes in Game 7 history in terms of NBA playoffs: Steph, who did it twice, and Grant Williams. I mean, that's the best company you can be in terms of that kind of stat. This was just poor defensive coverage on him by the Bucks, though. Like, he wasn't making tough shots. They put Lopez on him and left him open in the corner all night long because they wanted Lopez's size and rebounding and interior defensive presence down low. And he was always late to close out because, first of all, he's slow, and second of all, it looked like he wasn't showing much effort to close out. They were like giving him that shot, which didn't make any sense because he was shooting like 41% coming into the throughout the series or throughout these playoffs coming into the game. Like, you know, this guy's a shooter now. He wasn't coming out of college. That was one of the main things he needed to work on. He had everything else physically and, you know, in terms of rebounding and defense. But offensively, his jump shot was, you know, the main question. It's not anymore. I mean, he just burned him. He just burned him. It was poor defensive scheming from the Milwaukee Bucks. For the Bucks, Giannis had 25, 20, and 9. And he's the first player in playoff history with 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in a series. That is an unbelievable stat. Yes, it went 7 games, but still, he did everything he could without Chris Middleton. 21 from Drew Holiday, 15 and 10 from Lopez. The other two starters, Matthews and Allen, combined for 4 points. Grayson Allen, 1 point. 0 for 6 from the field, 0 for 4 from 3. They needed his shooting bad in this game. They needed game 1 or game 2, I forget which one it was, Grayson Allen, where he had like 27. The difference in this game was the 3-point shooting. Boston was 22 of 55 from 3. They shot 40% from downtown. Milwaukee, 4 for 33. That is 12%, folks. And that is a 54-point difference. Boston made 18 more threes than Milwaukee. That's a 54-point difference. The Bucks had their defensive game plan. They dared the Celtics to make outside shots, and they did, so credit to them. They move on to their 37th Eastern Conference Finals in franchise history and face the Heat starting on Tuesday. And those 37 appearances are exactly half of the Eastern Conference Finals that have ever been played. The Celtics have been in half of the Eastern Conference Finals in NBA history. That is just an unbelievable stat. Suns-Mavs Game 7 from Phoenix. The duo of Dinwiddie and Doncic put up a combined 48 points in the first half. The rest of the team had 9 points. No one else had more than 3. Luka had 27. But the Phoenix Suns as a team had 27. Yes, Luka Doncic had as many points as the entire Phoenix Suns team in the first half. Phoenix shot 24%, 21% from three, and they could never recover. It was an unbelievable performance by Luka and the Mavs. They just obliterated them. Superstars and shooting are the key to winning playoff series and defense. And the Mavs, surprisingly, have all three. I didn't realize. I knew they were a good shooting team. I didn't know their defense was this good. I knew Luka was special. I knew they could shoot the three. But frankly, I didn't see him getting past the first round. I thought Luka, you know, would do all he could, but the rest of the team wouldn't do enough. But the final score in this game is 123-90. That doesn't even tell you how much of a blowout embarrassment it was. I mean, the Suns were down by as many as 46 in this game. It was like 92-50 around the end of the third quarter, something like that. The Suns put up 63 second half points, but a lot of that was garbage time threes late in the fourth. It was just too little too late. Nowhere near enough, however you want to word it. Luka had 35 points and 10 rebounds in just 30 minutes. Spencer Dinwiddie had 30 points in just 25 minutes off the bench. And they are the first teammates to score 30 points in a game 7 since Kobe and Shaq in 2002. Spencer Dinwiddie and Luka Doncic just joined Kobe and Shaq. Jalen Brunson put up 24. Those were the only three in double figures for the Mavericks, but that's still 89 points combined, only one less than the entire Suns team in this game. The leading scorer for Phoenix was Cam Johnson with 12. Booker had 11. Paul had 10, a combined 7 of 22 from the field. Chris Paul is now 0 for 7 in his last 7 career game 7s. That's a lot of sevens, but it's like the fifth or sixth time he's blown a 2-0 series lead, including last year's finals against the Bucks. And the way they lost was just horrible. I mean, it was just complete and total domination from the Mavericks. Imagine paying a couple hundred, probably $1,000 for a ticket to that game. Game 7 on your home court as a Suns fan and getting whooped like that. That would be the biggest waste of money of all time. I feel bad for all 18, 20,000, however many fans were in that arena that night, because that was atrocious. That was one of the saddest ways to go out in playoff history. Game 7, you lose by 33. You trail by as many as 46. You don't even look like you belong on the same court as a kid who's 22. Luka Doncic is the real deal. And Chris Paul, after, you know, playing really well, he really was the best player in the series against the Pelicans. Just kind of laid an egg in the second series. I mean, he just was not. He was not good. And he says he's coming back next year. He says he will return. But he's 37, and I think this is the start of the decline for CP3. I said he was on the verge of being washed up when he got traded to OKC, and that was, you know, a faulty supposition. But I mean, now, this entire series, he was just not good. In foul trouble, turning the ball over at an alarming rate, really, for by Chris Paul's standards. And the offensive output just wasn't there. So the Phoenix Suns, the number one seed, number one overall seed in the league, best record in the league, best team in the league all season long, get absolutely demolished by the Dallas Mavericks in Game 7. James Harden, I said we'd revisit this subject. We're going to talk about him because in the series against the Miami Heat, he averaged 18 points per game, 6 rebounds, and 7 assists per game. He shot 40% from the field, 35% from three. That's actually a decent number, but it was a low volume. Everybody saw how much he underperformed. And there's people saying, you know, this isn't who he is anymore. Joel Embiid said that in the post-game press conference. He was just trying to cover for how pathetic he played. If you're Daryl Morey, you don't bring James Harden into play like this. If you're Embiid, you don't sign off on this trade for James Harden to play like this. Embiid's talking about how he's more of a facilitator now. There's no way that's what you traded Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, and Andre Drummond, along with a plethora of picks for. For James Harden to be a facilitator? No. For him to take two shots in the second half of an elimination game? Absolutely not. Ben Simmons took two shots in Game 7 against the Hawks. And he made one. He made one of them. Ben Simmons went 1-for-2 in the second half against the Hawks, Game 7. James Harden went 0-for-2 in the second half against the Heat. That is one of the most staggering stats of all time. They trade away Ben Simmons for Harden to take the same amount of shots. He was brought in to score. Be a second superstar, a leader, a potent offensive weapon. It just doesn't... You can't explain giving up Simmons, Curry, Drummond, and like three first-round picks, whatever it was, for Harden to play like this. Not 15 points a night with 11 assists. Getting others involved is great. Tyrese Maxey took off. But there comes a point in time where when you are that talented offensively, we're talking top three all time. That's the conversation we've had with this guy. He's up there with Jordan and Durant in terms of top three, you know, offensive talent, scorer. Scorer is a better word. Top three scorer of all time. And he puts up one 25-plus point playoff game in this year's playoffs. It's inexcusable. There is no way this is what the Sixers thought they would get when they traded all of that for James Harden. You don't give up the kind of assets they did for this. James Harden underperformed. He was a bust in this year's playoffs. He let the Philadelphia 76ers down. He let Joel Embiid down. Now, he's not going to say anything. Harden's pretty quiet off the court when it comes to his play. When it comes to other things, stuff leaks, stuff gets public with the kind of things he, you know, places he hangs out at. But we're just going to have to wait and see how he responds next year. Because right now he looks bad. He looks bad. He hasn't really been the same since that hamstring injury in last year's playoffs. I don't want to say that's the issue because that was over a year ago. Is this who James Harden is now? I mean, there's no explanation for what they gave up. And what bothers me the most is Embiid saying, oh, he's a facilitator now. No, that's not what you trade Simmons, Curry, Drummond, and multiple first-round picks for. Anyway, I'm going to take a break because I'm kind of heated right now. But when we come back, I'm going to give you my conference finals preview. The Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and the Heat, and the Western Conference Finals between the Warriors and the Mavericks. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I'm your host, Isaac Wolf. I've calmed down a little bit, and I'm going to give you my preview of the Celtics and the Heat Eastern Conference Finals Series. Celtics in six. Both of these teams are great defensively. That is not a question. The question is, which offense will step up and win the series? And that's what I think it comes down to in the series. That's why I have the Celtics, because I'm more confident in their ability to hit outside shots, in their volume of attempts, and their superstars. For the Heat, Jimmy Butler is a below average to average, if you're being nice, three-point shooter. He doesn't take that many. He does a lot of his damage from mid-range and inside at the free throw line a lot as well. Bam Adebayo, you know, all of his production is at the rim. Maybe you'll get a mid-range from him every now and then, but not likely. Tyler Hero is going to have to be big time off the bench for them if they want to, you know, keep up with the Boston offense. I mean, he's got to average 20 like he did in the regular season, if not 25 in this series. We're going to need to see Max Strus play like he did in Game 6 against Philadelphia. And other shooters like Gabe Vincent and Duncan Robinson could be needed in the rotation as well. Kyle Lowry is still out with that hamstring injury. That's an important thing to keep an eye on for Miami. As for Boston, they shot 38% from about 38% from three as a team in their series against the Bucks. That, as a team in a seven-game series, that's very impressive. Especially on their volume of attempts, because they took like 40, 50 a game. And the interior will be a lot more open for them than it was against Milwaukee, because Adebayo is undersized. He's 6'9". He's athletic. He can get to a lot of shots. And we saw him stuff Tatum at the rim 2 years ago in the bubble. But, you know, he's not 6'11", 7 foot like Giannis and Lopez. Sheer size, you know, does sometimes have the advantage over athleticism in terms of intimidation. And Jason Tatum is the best player in this series. If he plays like it, which I think he will, and he should, Boston will have the advantage. So I'm going to say Celtics in six for this one. They win in six games on their home court in game six because the Heat have home court advantage. In the Western Conference Finals, we've got the Warriors and the Mavericks. And I'm taking the Warriors in six. I wanted to say seven. I really did, because I think Luka is just that good. He was amazing in both of their series so far, this entire playoffs. He's going to carry the Mavs. We know that. The three ball will be the key to Dallas's offense, you know, outside of Luka. You know, you're going to need Dorian Finney-Smith knocking down threes, Jalen Brunson knocking down threes, Kleba and Bertans. You're going to need all that. But the same can be said for Golden State. The three ball is their key. It will be more potent, I think, with Steph, Clay, and Jordan Poole. Otto Porter, too. He shot the ball really well in their series against the Grizzlies. And even though I've seen some careless plays and bad turnovers and sloppy offensive possessions from the Warriors throughout this postseason, I think they're going to get it together. I think they've kind of been tuning up these last two series, and their experience once again will prevail against the young Mavericks. Luka will put up his best fight. We may see his best numbers ever. We may see a 50-point game from Luka Doncic. He's going to take a game or two, but I don't think it will be enough against the experience of, you know, the championship caliber, championship experience, really, Warriors. So Warriors in six and Celtics in six. That means I have a Warriors-Celtics final, but I'm not going to predict the finals until they are set. To wrap up today, this day in NBA history, in 1980, Magic Johnson had his legendary Game 6 Finals performance against the 76ers, in which he filled in for the injured Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at center and put up 42 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists in the Lakers championship clinching win. Those 42 points were the most by a rookie in Finals history, and I believe they still are. I would have to double check that to confirm that. Happy birthday to Kings guard Terrence Davis, and tune in to the draft lottery tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, followed by game one of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and the Heat at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. As for the draft lottery, the best odds are tied. It's a three-way tie between Houston, Orlando, and Detroit for the number one pick. And I love this draft. Followed by Oklahoma City with 12.5% and Indiana at 10.5%. Did you know Indiana, the Pacers, have not had a top nine pick since 1989? That was shocking. I knew they were mediocre / good forever, but like, not a top nine pick since 1989. Wow, this could be the start of something new for the Pacers. As for this draft class, I mean, if you get a top three pick, you're set for the future. I mean, Holmgren from Gonzaga, Banchero from Duke, and Smith from Auburn are all fantastic prospects that I think are going to be all-stars and franchise cornerstones. And, you know, if for Detroit, if you can pair Cade with one of those three, that's awesome. If you're Houston and you can pair one of those three with Jalen Green, and then you also have Josh Christopher and Alperen Sengun, I mean, the future's bright for both of those, you know, franchises if they can get a top three pick, which it looks like they will. And Orlando, Orlando just needs to start over. You know, they've given up Fournier, Vucevic, Gordon, you know, within the past year, and they are in full rebuild mode. And this is going to be a key offseason for them, finding, you know, that franchise cornerstone, hopefully with a top three pick. That's obviously what they're hoping for. But it will be very interesting to see how it all pans out. I'm excited. And yeah, tune in at 8 tomorrow. Tomorrow's a big day in the NBA, starting with the draft lottery and followed by the Eastern Conference Finals.